keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
It was an inside job. By the well connected. Your little protest. Summarily rejected.
Yes, business as usual. Or as I've been saying, you know, probably the greatest heist in the history of crime. You know, Bonnie and Clyde move over. Here come Donald Trump and Steven Mnuchin and the rest of the Republican Party. And I look at this, tax plan, which now the Treasury Department has put out a one-pager. They have a one-page analysis, which guess what? Give them credit for being honest. It's not going to pay for itself. It's not going to do all of the things that Mnuchin said it was going to do. In fact, guess what? And we already knew this. We don't need their one-pager to tell us. Massive debt. So there you go. And here's the thing. If you remember back, remember when Nancy Pelosi said that really stupid thing about the ACA? About, you know, once you find out what's in it, you're really going to like it? Truth of the matter is, you know, there's part of me that goes, okay, I get that. The more I find out about this tax plan and the more that we find out about this tax plan, the more we really, really hate it. And here to talk a little bit about the wonders of the, well, the boomeranging trickle-down theory. I've got Christian Weller here to come talk with us. He's a professor of public policy and public affairs at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. Christian, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Rick.
So the boomerang, it's back, supply-side voodoo Reaganomics, right here. It's now going to be great. Rivers of golden honey are going to flow down on us.
Well, if you assume that money will rain from the sky, things will be wonderful. No, it is ridiculous. We can sort of laugh about it, but this is serious stuff. So we have different versions in the House and the Senate. We're looking at $1.5 trillion in deficits. Most of that will remain. No serious analysis suggests that this will actually lead to faster growth, and any part will be paid for it by itself. That shouldn't be surprising.
Nope.
If you look at what both versions, the House and the Senate, do is they give massive tax cuts to corporations, and they give massive tax cuts to the rich. The logic here, if there is any logic, is if we shower lots and lots of money of rich people and companies, they will start investing that money, and that will bring sort of wonderful things to us, investments and stuff like that.
Yeah. Not
but on its face, that is nonsense, because we've had a natural experiment over the last 30 years where we've given in our economy more and more and more money to the richest Americans. And what we've seen is investment has stalled, manufacturing has declined, productivity has slowed. So we know that this doesn't work, that giving rich people more money is not going to boost the economy. So the tax cuts are doubling down on a failed strategy and wasting tons of money that we could use for a lot better purposes.
Yeah, but you know, but here's the thing. I'm told that we haven't done it enough yet, Christian. If we give them more, eventually their pockets will fill, and something's got to fall out behind them as they're running away. Something.
You know, what I saw today was a piece in Business Insider that listed sort of exactly that case of what billionaires hire people for, like an estate manager and a horse person and two chauffeurs and a cook. That's not going to boost the economy. That's not going to rebuild America's middle class. When you think about what we really need, and this is the stuff that should make us angry across the country, we have failing roads. Our schools are crumbling. We have kids in schools that don't have adequate heat in the winter or have adequate air conditioning in the summer. And we can't fix that. We have the child health CHIP, the health care program for children. We have that running out of money. We have states sending out letters to parents saying, like, go to the doctor before the end of the year because we can no longer pay. Because we need money for billionaires. That is insane. And we've tried this. Like, we've given rich people more and more and more money through various mechanisms, we have allowed them to erode unions, we've allowed them to screw workers, and it hasn't translated into better investment, and what we have is a weakening economy, and we need to put an end to this.
I'm right there with you. But here's the thing. You know, this is the other part of it, and you and I had someone make the case that, well, they'll invest in their business, and I said, yeah, maybe let's say that there is someone out there who is going to reinvest in their business. Chances are what they're going to reinvest in is automation, and they're going to get rid of their workforce. So how did that benefit the average everyday working person while simultaneously creating more debt down the road? How is that beneficial to the country as a whole when more people don't have jobs?
But what we, like, you only need to look at the numbers. Corporate businesses, they're the biggest winners from these tax cuts, saw their profits rebound by the end of 2008, in the middle of the crisis, 2 years before jobs came back. And what they did with all their profits, over 100% of their profits since the Great Recession, they used to buy back their own shares and pay out dividends to their shareholders. That's what they use their money for.
Right.
And that's what they have said they would use their money for. When Gary Cohn, the director of the National Economic Council for the White House, went to a business roundtable and asked people, like, what will you do? Will you invest? Basically, no hands went up among these business leaders. They all said, we're going to give it to our shareholders. They're blatant about it. They will say, we will not invest this money. We will use it to keep shareholders happy, but we will not buy it to hire more workers. We will not, because we don't need to.
Exactly. But let me ask you this, you know, because it's one of those things that where I saw the clip and I've actually used it a couple of times of him. Do you think he was truly surprised that no one was, I mean, to his core, does he fundamentally believe the rhetoric that they're throwing out and truly surprised that nobody was with him? Or was he surprised that nobody in the audience was smart enough to go, oh yeah, us, because it's a visual?
I think there's two things. I think to some degree he was surprised that nobody would sort of come and support his BS. But the other part is also, it doesn't matter at this point. This bill is so incredibly unpopular, and they're still pushing for it. They know they're going to get it, regardless of how much they're basically telling people. On the one hand, they're saying this is going to pay for it by itself because it's going to lead to more investment. On the other hand, they're showing that it's not going to lead to more investment. It's actually going to lead to more outsourcing. It's going to lead to more jobs overseas because there's incentives in there to move more money overseas. They know that it doesn't matter, that that lying to the American public at this point doesn't matter. And this is sort of the part that I think baffles me and many Washington observers. Why is Congress passing a bill, is moving forward with a bill that is incredibly unpopular, that has been debunked by every economist on the left and the right as basically a huge giveaway to people who don't need more money? And I think to some degree is they don't care. They think, to be honest, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, I think, believe that voters will have forgotten about it in 2018.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that get me. And I think they're going to take a beating in 2018. But I think they're thinking the long, long game, which is by starving government of resources, they can then come, because now they're creating a massive crisis for the future. They can come back and go after those quote unquote entitlements, kick those old people off of Social Security, end that Medicare and Medicaid, take food out of children's mouths, get rid of that CHIP program, and, you know, make this the Wild West of pay or die. To me, that's what I think, that, you know, they're playing the long game. Because, look, there were people who were saying in 2008 that the Republicans are never going to control. They're never even going to be allowed to drive the bus to the zoo with a kindergartner's picnic. How bad things were. But here they are. I mean, 8 years later, control everything. What does that say about us, the voters?
Well, I think there's different things. I mean, clearly there's sort of like the gerrymandering and especially House District and other things. But the other part is this is not a long game. They have already said that as soon as the tax bill is done, they're going to come for the entitlement.
Yeah.
They're gonna do Medicare and Social Security reform. They have already laid the groundwork in the tax bill for a massive cut in Social Security. By it's sort of a very technical
CPI
thing, but in the indexing the tax bill to tax brackets to a new inflation measure, they've already laid the groundwork to do the same with Social Security. And that would be an automatic cut every year in Social Security benefits. they don't need to go that far. They can start doing this in January, February. And this is the part. And then we know they will use the deficits if they create it with these tax cuts as the main justifications, and they have the technical tools then to quickly cut Social Security and Medicare by saying, like, look, we created these deficits. Now we have the deficits. They don't actually pay for themselves. Ha, 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 ha. And this is sort of the sick thing. And the part is, it's not just Social Security on Medicare. They already do it with a child health program. They're already saying, like, we don't have the priority. We don't have the time for this. And letting kids go without health insurance, even though it's a bipartisan program that's very popular and everybody likes it and wants to fund it.
I mean, this whole healthcare debate, I mean, at the end of this, and I've had these conversations with conservative voters going, they're showing and they're telling you exactly what their priorities are, and every one of those priorities continue to hurt you, and yet you still vote for them. It's like wearing a kick me sign that you sewed into the back of your own shirt.
I can't speak for the voters, but I think that the primary issue really is, Rick, as you say, it is a matter of choices. And I think that's what people don't understand. People sort of look at this tax bill and it's like, well, Republicans are going to give tax cuts to rich people. It's like, well, if they give rich people tax cuts, they don't have money for the stuff you want. We can't spend a dollar twice. And that's sort of what people sort of forget, that if you spend $1.5 trillion in deficits on tax cuts, that means $1.5 trillion less for Social Security, Medicare, for infrastructure investments, for education, for your kids. And it's amazing to me how little of the discussion is actually about that this is a matter of choices. There's no natural law that we have to cut taxes for rich people. But this is a policy choice, and it's the wrong choice at the wrong time for this country.
Yeah, no, see, I've been saying for a long time, I would like to see us go back to the good old days of the good socialist President Dwight David Eisenhower. Because back then, the tax rate was well, more than double what it is now. And we still had money to invest in roads and bridges. We fought wars. We paid for education and, you know, healthcare and all kinds of stuff. And we still had rich people.
But they weren't rich enough.
Well, there is that. And that's the question. How much is enough? And I guess it's never enough, is it?
No, but at this point, it is like you look at the numbers and you sort of look at how much money the top 1% has gotten away with in the last two decades in particular. It is insane. Basically leaving nothing for the rest. I mean, truly, no income growth for middle Americans. And we're now rewarding that with the largest tax cut for them by saying, like, we're going to give you a little bit. We're going to give you a lot more, and we're going to take it from middle and lower income Americans, and we're going to then cut. And that's just a tax bill. And then we're going to cut Social Security and Medicare and education and everything else on top of that. The problem is really people need to understand that this is a matter of choice, that this is – we can stop this. There are presumably some Republicans who are sick, like even in Congress. I mean, there are people who've made noises, like Susan Collins from Maine or Jeff Flake from Arizona, who've said they're uncomfortable with some parts of it. There is room to stop this. But the main point is not just simply to stop Republican policy. It's stopping the draining of resources that we desperately need for other things. We all agree we need to fix our infrastructure. That needs to be a top priority.
Yep.
We need to fix the infrastructure across the country, not just in the big cities, but in the small cities everywhere across the country. And that costs a ton of money, and we're squandering that money right now.
You know, one of the things that, and I'm not a huge Thomas Friedman fan, but I saw a speech of his a couple of years ago, and he said, you know, he had come back from China. He had flown from Beijing to LAX, and he said it was like flying from the, you know, going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. And he said the saddest thing about what's going on in this country, and I understand this was, you know, several years back, we don't invest in the future anymore. He said, you know, we used to invest up to our technological ability and then try and push that a little bit further. We're not doing any of that today, and I absolutely agree with him. What we've done is we've given our future away to a handful in the hopes that maybe out of the goodness of their hearts, they'll provide it for us, and it's never going to happen.
Well, they're laughing all the way to the bank and taking the money to some tax havens. I mean, the problem is, it's not just the visible infrastructure, right? It's not just the roads and the rails and the bridges and the crumbling schools that we have, but it's also the fact that we don't have world-class, we don't put enough money into research and development, we don't put enough money into education across all forms of education, be that college, be that apprenticeships, be that everything. That's sort of what we need. We need to figure out how to make world-class products, and I think we do, but we also need to make sure that we have people with the skills to doing that. And we need to then make sure that the stuff that we make in the middle of Pennsylvania or in western Massachusetts gets to the airports, gets to the world markets, where it can compete. And at every point, we're not making the investments, and instead, we're sort of saying, like, here, Apple, you get another $47 million or whatever from this tax bill, $47 billion, and we know they're going to bring it to Bermuda.
Yeah, it's insane. You know, one of the most egregious things in this, and there's a bunch of things, and, you know, one of the things, I never thought it could get any worse than what came out of the tax reform bill of 86, where they began taxing unemployment benefits for the first time, which I just thought was a major slap in the face to working people, especially steel workers who were losing their jobs during the 80s and all of the deindustrialization that happened and all those workers who and to this day, we still tax unemployment benefits. Again, massive slap in the face. I didn't think it could get any worse than this, but then I read a New York Times article over this weekend that evidently now we're going to be because of this, if this goes through, their priority is to give tax breaks to independent contractors and to, you know, people who have been misclassified as independent contractors over actual employees. And the first thing I thought is, you know, this is just union busting to that next level of ways that we wouldn't even think about it being union busting.
I'm not sure. I don't know exactly what that referred to. There are, I mean, we're giving tax breaks to high-income independent contractors, but you would have to make a lot of money to get a tax break from the past for business. But the part is, we're giving tax breaks for private jet owners. We're giving tax breaks, in at least the Senate version, to luxury automobile owners. Not only is this the wrong policy choice, it's also, when it comes to, like, even sort of the more much narrower topic of tax reform, it is a bill riddled with loopholes that nobody fully understands.
Right.
Nobody really had time to read. And it's, by and large, whoever got their pencil in hand at that night when Senate voted for it and could scribble a little tax break for their own favorite lobby on it will get a little loophole in it. And who knows? The final bill will probably be riddled with those kinds of giveaways. So it's not only just the wrong policy choice, it's also the wrong way to go about tax reform. It's not making the tax code simpler. It's not making the tax code fairer. In fact, it is creating more and more incentives for especially well-connected and rich people to play the game.
Yeah. Last question I've got for you. Any way you see this being stopped? I mean, what should people be doing to try and stop this?
Well, I think people should really, like, take a closer look at some of these analyses, understand that this is about key choices, that we're choosing to mortgage our future for the benefit of a few rich people and very well-heeled corporations, and that robs us of the opportunity to invest in our own future. There are clearly Congress people, especially in the Senate, who are waffling on it and who are concerned about the deficit, who are concerned about infrastructure, who are concerned, for instance, I mean, I'm concerned about the effect on Social Security and Medicare, but there's many who are concerned about what that will do for defense spending, for instance. The money has to give somewhere if you have these massive deficits. And I think connecting with Congress people who are voting on this soon and voicing the concerns, I think, will be sort of the most important thing in the coming weeks.
Yeah, call early, call often, all of that stuff. Christian, I appreciate the time. Great talk with you. Love to have you on again real soon.
Anytime, Rick, anytime. Have a good night.
Good stuff. Our good friend Christian Weller. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around to listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Get a good job, Rick, or paying your own.
where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.